Oh, gosh. Thank you, Tricia. I'm Liz, and I'm an alcoholic. And I have so enjoyed myself today. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, all the speakers ahead of me. And, you know, thank you, Tricia, for thinking of me to fill in for Melina. And our prayers are with her. I understand she's just not feeling very good, and I'm honored to do this for her. Gosh, you guys got something really special here. Okay? That name is so perfect. Okay. There's a lot of you out there. My sobriety date is September 1st, 1985. I have a sponsor. Her name is Terry R., who's got 48 years. And her sponsor is Fran T. from Tacoma, who's got 52 years, and she's 97. And I really love what all the speakers ahead of me have said about, it's just like my blanket, our book. I rushed right into the steps at 10 years sober. I'll get to that in a minute. So I got here the month before I turned 27. So if I stay with you people till September 1st, I'll celebrate 4 decades of sobriety. And it is a big deal. And I don't. Okay, I'd like to start. I heard something recently that really resonated with me. A friend of mine from Camino Island said that she was a high bottom drunk, and that didn't make her any different than anybody else, even low bottom. And believe me, I had a really low bottom in this part of my family. She said, what keeps us together and what's in common is what's in the first 164 pages. Some people say 192, whatever, but the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Jason's not here tonight. Or maybe, Jason, are you here? 3 years? We had something in common. I was at a meeting with him yesterday, and we were talking. Hi, Jason. So we have, both were Catholic students for 13 years. That means that we both got put back in a grade. My parents said that they were going to send the school that I graduated from a bill because all I came out with was my social degree. I can't wait to hear your story. Humor. I just love the humor today. You know, buckle up. I loved that. Pay attention. You know, it might get kind of crazy. I can relate to that. So my father was an alcoholic. My mother's brother was an alcoholic. His son was an alcoholic. Their mother was an alcoholic, my grandmother. So I come from a few alcoholics. And, of course, my sister, oh, gosh, bless her heart. I want to start out with a story because it really does have to do with why I kind of am the way I am. So at about 9 years old, I got very inquisitive, and I wanted to know why I had 3 sets of grandparents. And my mom was married to her first husband, and in 8 days that they were together, before he got shipped to the Korean War, she got pregnant with my sister. And so the entire time that she was pregnant with my sister, she was grieving the loss of her husband. And fast forward to 2011, when she got the call that they had found my sister and that she had passed, my mom immediately called me and said, your sister is gone and she died from an overdose. And my immediate reaction to that was, Mom, she's not suffering anymore. But my mom immediately told me this story, and she says, I know you thought that I cared about your sister more than I did you. And I often wondered growing up, I was kind of left to do my own thing, and I was very self-sufficient, kind of a chameleon, and, you know, just, I was popular, okay? So I, and I had fun. I did have fun, and I wasn't the greatest student because, of course, I was having fun. And she said, that is really, I need to tell you that that is not the truth. She told me that the entire time she was pregnant with my sister, that she was grieving so badly, and she was pretty young at the time, that she felt it necessary throughout my sister's life, and it, believe me, it was a lot that she needed to be there to focus on my sister, and that she was really, really sorry. And I've been sober a while at this time. I said, Mom, that is not your fault. And that kind of opened the door for her and I to have a very special relationship. And I should back up here. Let me give you a little drunk lock. I don't know how many other people were brought up in the kind of background of me, but we all drank, the whole neighborhood, all the kids. We were, you know, good Catholic families, and we, you know, keggers up the street, and I see a few people smiling out there, and it was great, you know. And then I went to, you know, I still have friends that I, you know, have in my life from first grade, so it's neat, it's really special. So one of the Well, I have a very dear friend. This is a person that'll come up in my story a bit. Her name is Mary Jo, and we got drunk our first time, orange juice and vodka with not much water, and I proceeded to get the spins, and I threw up right on her head, sleeping next to the bed with me. Now, the reason why I say that is because she ended up taking me to my first meeting on March 23rd, 1985. And she's still today, as I will get to, a big part of my life. So my big thing was, I progressed. And towards the end, I was a binge drinker. I was a blackout drinker. I liked to drink copious amounts of alcohol and drive, and I had, I don't remember how old I was probably in my early 20s. I graduated from high school in 76. This might have been the late 70s, I don't remember, but I worked at a credit union, and I took out a loan to buy my first car. I bought a 73 Camaro, and it was a pretty sweet car, and you know, because of my drinking and driving, I, dented it up a little bit. So I took out a loan to get it all fixed up, and it was sweet. Fast forward maybe 4 or 5 months, and I'm still living at my parents', and I was driving from, I don't know if you guys know, Burien to, like, Wedgwood in Seattle. It's quite a ways. And the next morning, my mom woke me up and said, what did you do to your car? What do you mean, what did I do to my car? Look out the window. And I had smashed the whole left side of that car. I couldn't even open the driver's door. My mom and my dad, and I'm probably 21 or 22 here, sat me down and just said, you know what? You could be in serious trouble. If you don't remember anything, how do you know you didn't kill somebody? And, you know, I was listening at that point. They drove into me the seriousness of what had happened, and just by looking at my car, it was pretty bad. But that didn't stop me. I probably kept going for another 5 years. So that's the kind of things that happened to me. I also had back surgery, which is really traumatic, when I was 24. And in doing the recovery and the, the drugs that I needed to have to get better, and the copious amount of alcohol that I was still drinking just spiraled me. Plus, I was still doing the driving and all that. And what happened was I got a negligent. It was reduced. I didn't get arrested. I got a negligent. And then 5 months later, I almost ran a state patrolman off the road and blew a 2.2. And I was in deep shit, to say the least. And I, at the time, had a job where I needed my car to drive. So it was scary. Okay, I thought my life was over. Also, at this time, I was sad to say, very promiscuous. I think I mentioned that this morning during the Ask It Basket. And I don't conduct my life like that today, you know. But it was tough. And so, let's see. You know, it's funny. I was thinking, this is kind of a side note, sorry. I was thinking when I don't know if it was a dream or if I was thinking about speaking here, but I thought, God, wouldn't it be a lot easier if I had like a show and tell thing so I could just kind of like point out pictures and this is what happened here. I thought, wow, that's a great idea. So then I started thinking about my life in decades because I've been around here now 4 decades, right? So the first decade was my 20s into my 30s, and I too got married to a guy that I felt like I was a business transaction, really. He was a business person, and this was the late 80s, and this gentleman asked me to marry him, and right around that time, and I think one of the questions is at the Ask It Basket was, what was your first spiritual experience like? Now, remember, I haven't gotten into working the steps yet. But at the same time that this person asked me to, my first husband asked me to marry him, my dad found out he had bladder cancer. And it was a little bit surprising. He was still pretty young, and I think he's 62. And he chose, and I went to all the appointments with him. I got to hear what the doctor said, but my dad chose to have his bladder taken out, and I don't know if we have any nurses in here, but that's pretty radical. And, of course, back in 92, I don't know if there was other treatments available or whatever, but I just remember it, them telling, the doctor told us that, okay, we're going to do surgery at this time, and you guys are going to be in the waiting room. We're going to take... my dad's name was Frank. We're going to take Frank in about 7 o'clock. We're going to get him all ready. And about 10 o'clock, we're going to call your mom in the waiting room, and we'll give her the thumbs up or the thumbs down on whether the cancer had gone out of the bladder wall. And the reason why I tell you this is because this is significant in my believing in a higher power, believing that there's a God, and I'm not it. That was a hard one for me. So it seemed like forever we were waiting. And that call came, and they called, Peggy Thompson it seemed like she was walking all the way to the other end of this whole room. And she turned around to me and gave me the thumbs up, and it was like, So, but that kind of started a long road to recovery. And my folks lived They're retiring now. We're having a wedding, and then they're moving up into the San Juan Islands where the ferry only runs till like 6 o'clock at night. So if something happens, you're kind of SOL. And that's exactly what happened. So here, back to, the God of my understanding. That marriage didn't work, obviously. And very shortly, beautiful wedding. My parents spent a lot of money on that. And it just didn't work. And I was very unhappy. And so I left that marriage and really, my life was down around my ankles. I was sponsoring some women that were involved in a group in Seattle called Drunks Are Us North. And I'm not sure, I know Penny knows. We were both very involved in that, and I just lost my darn place. No, there it is. Okay. That's where I got introduced to this workshops and was very intrigued with it. And my marriage is failing. I think I'm 36 at the time, and it was just time. Let me just say that early on, my friend Mary Jo got me involved with winter holidays, with PSYPC, campouts. I know what it takes to put something like this on. It's not an easy task, so I commend you. I understand this used to be a weekend thing. It's a lot of work, okay? So I'm getting a little bit of interest, intrigued by the workshops and what I'm hearing in meetings, and met a gal by the name of Beth Ann, who I met with once a week and went through the first 164 pages of the book. And on the night before I turned 10, I did my fifth step. And I remember very specifically, again, another spiritual experience when she did step three with me. She did this. Oh, I'm not going to go there. She did a couple of extra things that were just really, really special about walking down a hallway. And what do you see in this room? Was your mom there? How do you feel about your mom? It was really, really special. And so, being brought up in a very organized religion and not having a choice. I used to be very angry about not having a choice about being baptized. But today I don't feel that way anymore. So let me read this. Much to our relief, we discovered we do not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make an approach to an effect to effect a contact with him. And that own conception, I had had enough introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, gone to enough meetings, gone to enough fun things, experienced enough things with my sister to know that I needed a God of my understanding. And so I was kind of off and running. Now, at the same time, it says also we found that God does not take too hard terms with those who seek him. And I really love that. As long as we seek him, he will be there. So at the same time all this is going on, I'm going through a divorce. I met him. His name was Peter. And I heard Dennis talk about 30 years. I know Matthew's been with his wife for 30 years. And our anniversary is April 2nd. We would have been 30 years together. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do this so early. Penny said, tell the truth. The truth is that second decade of sobriety with him was awesome. And we started a life together, and you know, you sometimes see people, you wonder if they ever ever experience anything bad because everything goes so good. Well, I feel really lucky that I had everything that I had with him. Drunks Are Us, he was a home group member. And at the same time, they had this retreat that they had it every September. And for the first four years of our relationship, I was so jealous of all these people that got to go to this retreat. And I finally got asked, I don't know if anybody in the room knows who Kenny D is. We also lost Kenny recently. And Kenny asked me if I would do the retreat with him. And I'll tell you, it was the honor of a lifetime. I was just like flabbergasted. I got to do the speakers. I got to fly them out. I got to have them at my home. And they would tell their story of working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous out of the Big Book. It was really, really special. And I did that for 9 years with Kenny. And then Kenny stepped aside, and I can't remember what all took place, but that retreat is no longer. But Kenny and I always remained really, really good friends. So, okay, let me take a deep breath here. And around that time, Pete and I, he'd never been to Hawaii. And I was working for an insurance company at the time, and I won a trip. Our sales division out of the Northwest did really good 1 year, and because I was part of the sales team, I got a nice chunk of money. I go, Pete, you want to go to Hawaii? So we did. And we found out about this big conference over there called the Big Island Bash. Yeah? Really fun. If you ever get a chance to do it, it's really, really fun. And we did that for several years in a row, and we ended up getting married at the end of the bash on April 2nd of 2000. Now, we were all talking about marriages and stuff this morning when people sometimes would ask Pete if he'd ever been married. He would say, anybody remember? Occasionally. You guys, he was the funniest. He was so funny, and he just was really. He was a good AA guy. He sponsored a lot of people, but he was very unassuming. I mean, but anyway, so we get married and we started a really beautiful life. We bought our first home right before we got married in December of '99, and then we kind of kept making our way north. And then, okay, I got to stay in the decades because I got to make sure I tell you everything. How much? Oh, she's gone. I have no idea what time it is. Okay. Pete was a surveyor and a really, really good one. And he loved his job. And he was very, for a dropout and a junkie, he really did well. And at the end of he wanted to retire, and they kept throwing him, you know, stuff to keep working. And at the same time all that's happening, my dear dad got cancer again at the end of 2013. It got liver and lung, and he passed away 7 days after my birthday in September of 14. And I was really close to my dad. And my dad got sober when he got the bladder cancer. He quit smoking and he got sober. So he died with 22 years of sobriety, but he didn't come and be with us. But regardless, I'm really proud of him for that. So where was I? right after my dad died, I realized that something was not right with my mom. And every time I talked to her, she said, "Oh, I'm doing paperwork, honey." I go, "Well, what kind of paperwork are you doing?" And she'd say this, "Well, I'm trying to get stuff together for taxes." And it would be Christmas, and it's not even tax time or, you know, summertime, whatever. And I said, "Mom, do you need some help?" And she said, "Maybe." And I knew that she was getting forgetful. And then one time the retirement home or the, retirement home, assisted living, they called me up and they said, "You need to get your keys away from your mom. She just drove up over a curb and almost went right into an apartment." And so that kind of changed everything again for me. And at this time, they're in Anacortes, and I'm living on Camino Island and going back and forth a lot, and calls in the middle of the night. And it was, you know, she had dementia. And I'll never forget that last Christmas of 16. Pete and I had her over to the house, and I made her prime rib. That was her favorite for Christmas, and she, you know, I don't know what kind of dementia she had, but she'd have to go to the bathroom every 10 minutes, okay? So she'd take her stroller or her walker and go into the bathroom, and she came back out into the kitchen, and she looked at Pete, and she looked at me, and she said, "You guys are going to come back and get me for Christmas, aren't you?" And Pete and I, that's when we both looked at each other, and there was no more correcting her, you know. It set in. And she passed away on May 25th of 2017. And because of you guys and because of the steps of this program and the grace of God, the last 2.5 years of her life, I was there for her. And remember, when I was a kid, she was taking care of my sister, and we became really tight. I would walk into the group home that she was staying at, and she'd go, "Oh, there's my girl," you know, and it just would make me so happy. She was a force to be reckoned with. So I'm going through boxes after she passed, and this is why I wish I could have show and tell. I was always kind of afraid of my mom. She was a force to be reckoned with. She ran big banks and credit unions. When she retired, she was working as the CFO of a credit union for all the credit unions of Washington. I mean, she had big jobs. Now, I didn't appreciate that about my mom until I'm going through all this paperwork, and I found this picture. I just will never forget the feeling I had. I was sitting on the floor, and it's a picture of, I don't know, there's probably 60 people in the picture. All the men, this is a bank that my mom worked at in 62 when we came back from Guam. My dad was in the service, and she is in the middle, sitting down with all the men, and all the women that worked for her were standing and kneeling in front of her. She's right sitting in between all these men. And I looked at that picture, and then everything from my whole life finally made sense. I don't know if I can convey that enough, that it was just wild. I have two frames of those in my house now, and I walk by it and I smile. The reason why she wasn't around is because she was working so hard. You know, she was trying to provide and make money to put my sister and I through private schools. And a little good did it do us, but I don't know. I just, she was a special woman. And both of these girls, Trisha sat with her right before she died. Pete and I were in Hawaii when we got the call on Mother's Day. I sent her flowers on Mother's Day, and then we get the call that they got to take her to the hospital. And we couldn't get home. I don't know why we couldn't get home, but we had to wait till like the next Wednesday to get home. And then when my dad died, my husband, being the outdoors guy, is up on top of a mountain and called me. And I had to tell him that my dad had just died. So when my mom was dying, he wasn't going to leave my side. He told his work, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here. And I just so appreciated that. So both of us sat on both sides of the bed until she passed. And actually, I knew she wouldn't do it when I was there. She kept saying, I don't want to go. I don't want to leave you. And we kept saying, Mom, it's up to God. So anyway, she was a wonderful woman, and I'm so glad that I had that time with her. How much time do I have?
21 minutes.
Oh, good. Okay, perfect. Everything this far, I just have to say that God has given me so much grace. Every time I turn around when something happens and, I take a deep breath and I try and understand what the meaning of it is, okay? And sometimes you just don't know, okay? But no matter what has happened in my life, being part of this program and having all of you holding me up has meant the world. And it's this next chapter where that really came into play. We decided, Pete wanted to finally retire. So he retired in May of 19. And we're both outdoors people. He loves to hike. I actually do too, but I don't like carrying all my shit on my back. But I would do it because he loved it, and I loved being with him. And he would spend so much time planning these backpacking trips. I did do one with him at the Wallowas, 30 miles for a week. It was great. I really enjoyed that. But anyway, so we decided to retire in Winthrop, and we bought a piece of property that was just like sweet, okay? It was really sweet with this beautiful view. Sometimes I pinch myself. I don't know how I deserved that. So we built our dream home. Pete built his dream home. And we moved July 6th of 19, and in December or beginning of January, there's two times that he said, honey, come here. You have to see this. So I go into the bathroom. He's got his arms up in the air, and he's got two golf balls under his arms. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, aggressive. And so it was, Pete was at a, he was our GSR for our home group over there, and he was at an area quarterly in Ephrata after he had driven to get the results of his biopsy, and he found out that it was actually in lymphoma, and it was cancer. Then he went to the quarterly, and he tells a story about, there's a gal from OMAC, her name is Dolores, and Dolores really liked Pete. And she, I don't know if she knew what was going on or whatever, but she just asked him to go to lunch. And so he was able to share it with somebody, and that kind of started our journey. So, the first, and Pete, oh gosh, you guys, he just went through hell. It was, the next 4 years were hell. I mean, there's just no other way to say. And I don't want to get too specific because you guys probably don't want to know all that. But the first two chemos, he ended up in the hospital. I thought I was going to lose him right off the bat. It was really weird. The second one was COVID. COVID started. It was just really crazy. He got through chemo, and then 21 was sort of uneventful. He's trying to come back from that. I don't know if anybody in here has ever been through that treatment, but it's pretty gnarly. So because of the chemo in 2022, he had to have 6 catheterizations of his heart. And living in, okay, for me, I mean, Patricia was telling me, don't forget to talk about what it was like for you. And what it was like for me that whole time was just, it was traumatic. It was, I didn't really have a moment's of peace. I mean, I just had to show up. I mean, it was, there was something going on all the time. So anyway, and then once again, the support, you know, people were just showing up. It was really, really special. So they couldn't, you know, over in Winthrop, there's not a lot of facilities for infusions and heart stuff. And so we're driving all over the place. So he ends up over at the University of Washington. And I think the fourth time that they went into his heart, they nicked it. And so they had to save his life. And 2 more, and then we had a Christmas party. We loved to have Christmas parties with all our AA friends, and we'd do gift exchanges, and they were hilarious, okay? People would bring the funniest things. Oh, my gosh, I miss our parties. So we had a party in Winthrop on December 11th, and I hear that. Honey, come here. You have to see this again for the second time. And his right leg was 3 times bigger than the left leg. And we had 2 golden retrievers. One was 12 years old, and I don't know if anybody saw me with the other one today. He's like my little sidekick now, and he's going to be 6. So at the time, he was 3. When we moved over to Winthrop, Pete said, let's get another dog. And I said, you're crazy. So, but we did. And we packed up the car and the dogs, and we went to Wenatchee for the week. And on Thursday, and COVID has come. It's December, so COVID is acting up again, and there's all kinds of people at the ER at Central Valley Hospital. It was nuts. It's like every time we went through something, it was just crazy. And on Thursday, they were going to let him go home, and they said, but you're a lymphoma survivor, so we're going to biopsy where they went into his femoral artery 6 times. Yeah. So, yeah. Lymphoma was back. And so that means a transplant, a stem cell transplant. And, you know, he'd already been through hell. He really had already been through. We both had. Well, that happens over at Fred Hutch. And, you know, I haven't had a lot of time to tell you all the good things that would help that happened because of all this, but this is one I'm going to share with you. So we're with Pete's sponsor, Vic Kay, and his wife, who's a longtime Al-Anon. We're having breakfast, and a friend of theirs is sitting there, and we're telling them the story, and, you know, what's going to happen. And this guy, his name was Kirk, talked to his cousin the next day. And she says, oh, Kirk, I just signed documents to buy a house in Madison Park, which is 10 minutes from UW Hospital. And he said, I know a family that needs a place to stay. She said, well, they can use my house because I can't move till June, because her last child, was graduating from high school, and she didn't want to move until he graduated. So we have this house 10 minutes from the hospital. What a miracle. Oh my goodness. So there are a lot of good things happen. I don't want this to just be, God lifted us up. He really did. And Peter was always optimistic. He really wanted to live. I remember us having the first Zoom meeting with the head of the transplant over at Fred Hutch, and the guy just did not hold back anything. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, we think we've been through what's brutal. Fuck. What we're going to go through. And I remember saying to Pete, honey, are you really sure you want to do this? And he looked at me angrily and he said, Liz, I want to live. That was brutal. You know, the first month, and we were over there for 90 days. The first month was all testing. The second month was the apheresis machine where they take the blood out and divide it. The nurse that was doing this that day, she's so cute. She was 76 years old and been doing it for 30 years, and she was really proud of what she was doing. And she kept looking at the blood, and she kept saying, see that shimmer, Liz? And I say, yeah. And she said, that's really good. So when we were all done, it like took 6 hours. And at the end of the time, she takes the bag and she's rubbing it like, it was really funny. And she says, see that?
In the mic.
Oh, sorry. See how beautiful that is? And I said, yeah. She was so proud of herself. So anyway, that went well. And then the next thing they do is they give them 6 days of major chemo and basically make you go dead so that they can treat those stem cells and then stick them back in. And that week of the chemo, the first day, 2 at night, for Tuesday through Saturday, it was 2 bags in the morning and 2 bags at night of really nasty shit. And then the last day, nurses that are in here, do we have any oncology nurses here? Okay. There's a chemo called melphalan, and that's the worst one. And so just things kept happening faster, and his, the heart issues were playing a part in it. His kidneys started to fail. It all happened really, really fast. And remember, my mom died on May 25th. Pete died May 24th, 2023. And I didn't get to say goodbye. They had intubated him. And I asked him to wait till I got back to the hospital, and that didn't happen. And so that's a whole, I'm not going to go into that. But some girlfriends of mine moved me back to Winthrop, and they stayed for a week, and I just couldn't stay over there by myself. And so that was the first week of June, and by July 6th, the house was on the market, and I sold it within 3 days. I got great offers. God took care of me, and I'm pretty sure Pete had something to do with it, too. And then I turned around and bought a place in Laconia that's pretty sweet, too. 5 minutes? Okay. That's perfect. Once I got back over to the west side, I mentioned earlier today that it's taken me a little bit to, when your partner of 30 years is taken away, he was just such a big part of my life and a lot of people's lives. And I have my memories, I have my memories forever. And the comforting thing for me, Alcoholics Anonymous for sure, my sponsor was going through the same damn thing. She lost her husband two months after Pete died. I mean, it's just been nuts, okay? It's just, I often said over there, people wouldn't believe me if I kept telling them what was happening, but maybe I'll write a book. I don't know. But I am blessed. I really do feel like a blessed woman. I have friendships that are just amazing. You know, I talked to my sponsor tonight. She prayed with me, and she said, you'll do fine. But it's really hard not to get up here and be funny. And my story's not funny. It's just not. And I think I said this at the meeting yesterday about I am a good example of no matter what, you can stay sober, right? The worst it ever got was come back over Highway 20 from Winthrop, coming down off of Washington Pass. It did cross my mind that if I just drove straight off that cliff, that maybe I could join him. And then the next thought was, no, God's got something for me to do here. And I hope by sharing that Mary Jo, she was there until the very end. So was Penny. The dog got to come in the ICU and say goodbye to his dad. I mean, really, a lot of really, really sweet things happened. And so anyway, for all of you that are new, hang on, buckle up, okay? It's a ride. It's a ride, but it's a great ride. Thank you.